And thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. And our topic today is being normal and being kind. Now, this is partially inspired by Jupiter's year-long cycle in the partnership sign of Libra, but it's mostly inspired by our deep-seated desire to find a cure for what I'd call separation. Now, if you're a student of the Course, then you know ultimately the answer is forgiving ourselves for ever having believed that separation from God or separation from each other is even possible. And learning this kind of forgiveness is a lifelong adventure. It's not like we learn it one day and poof, there it is. At least it's not that way for me. But I do think it can be accomplished on a day-by-day basis or maybe even a moment-by-moment, case-by-case basis. Now, Ken Wapnick used to talk about the importance of being normal and being kind. And in fact, he lectured on these topics frequently, and he even wrote and published two books, The Healing Power of Kindness, Volume 1, Releasing Judgment, and Volume 2, Forgiving Our Limitations. Now, these books are part of a series Ken referred to as small books on the practice of A Course in Miracles. And in truth, they really are small because they measure only about 5 by 7. And there's maybe at most 100 pages in each of them. And they're the perfect size to stick in a purse, a briefcase, a backpack, and you can read them pretty quickly. Although I should actually qualify that a bit because material I find is so profound that often I read only a few pages at a time because that's all I can really absorb. I mean, it's like little gems everywhere. And these small books on the practice in A Course in Miracles, they're all little gems. There's lots of topics. I don't know how many are available, maybe as many as 20. And if you're interested in them, you can purchase them online in the bookstore at a Foundation for A Course in Miracles by going to www.facim.org. Or I've also seen them on Amazon.com. So you can find them, these little small books on the practice of A Course in Miracles. And fortunately, they also have a small price. So that's kind of a winner too. Now, recently I have been rereading these books on kindness, and I mentioned it to Susan Dugan. And this coincides perfectly with what she's been teaching in classes recently. How do you like that? Synchronicity. So we decided it would be a great topic to talk about on today's show. Now, I know many of you are familiar with Susan Dugan, but I always like to introduce her for new people that may be listening to the show. She's the author of Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and her latest book, Forgiveness, The Key to Happiness. She's the co-founder of the School for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. So I'm always thrilled to have Susan join me once a month and have a conversation. And while we're having the conversation and you're listening to the show today, I would also invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook, which is a private group that you can get to if you go to our website, 1-2radio.com. And on the left side of the page, you can click that chat button. And when you do, you'll automatically be redirected to our private group on Facebook where you can make comments or ask questions and that sort of thing and just interact during the show. So go ahead and do that if you'd like to, and I'll join you over there. But let's get Susan on the show. So welcome, Susan. Thank you for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, well, thank you. It's always wonderful for me. And I do love the synchronicity. I love when I ask you, hey, what do you think we ought to talk about? You always come up with something great. And when I had mentioned to you that I was rereading these little books, it just worked perfectly with what you have been teaching in your classes recently.
Yeah, well, I think kindness certainly is at the heart of the course's teaching, even though it's not always, you know, directly stated that way. But learning to be really, truly kind and you know means seeing how unkind we are most of the time, how we're always trying to see to emphasize differences among people and to distinguish ourselves in some way from others, and to, you know, all of our judgments, all of our internal criticism, and all of our, you know, constantly, you know, just sort of being on the lookout for someone else slipping up around us, you know,
mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just really all of the way that we, everything is always all about us, and you know, we're very selfish, we're very self-centered, and we tend to, you know, we're dreaming a dream of which we are the hero. And you know, we don't really, we see everything only from the, what, how it's going to benefit me. And we need the world constantly to sort of affirm us. And, you know, when it doesn't, we are very unkind. And, you know, we need to be right and we need to be agreed with. And if not, we behave like tiny little children and throw tantrums.
Yeah. And as an astrologer, I've been thinking about kindness a lot lately because Jupiter did move into Libra. And I'm convinced, you know, how things just kind of come to you. Well, I'm just convinced part of this cycle, certainly Libra wants justice, you know, and we've seen a lot of that lately too. People going, we want justice. But Jupiter, this year-long cycle, it's about manners and it is about partnership and being kind to each other. So when Jupiter moved a week or so ago, I thought, you know what, I'm going to pull out those little books because I hadn't read them in a while, the Healing Power of Kindness. And it was just, it's so perfect. I mean, in fact, I'll tell you what I'm doing, Susan. I'm typing some of the passages or some of the sections onto my computer, and I'm going to print them out and cut them out and then put them on in my bathroom and on my closet door, etc. Because, you know, I read it and just almost like a little kid, I think, how did I forget this? How did I forget how important this is? And, you know, like Ken even says in one place, he said, this is what you, all you have to do is just say to yourself or say to your inner guide and teacher, I don't know how to be kind, but that is my goal, to be kind and gentle and caring and loving. He said, just do that. And I thought, you know what? So I'm just going to put that right on the bathroom mirror. You know, don't forget, what is your real goal here? Because I think even as course students, we get all wrapped up in the metaphysics, or we get all wrapped up in these details, and we forget the basic stuff, which Ken often comes back and just says, be normal, just be normal people and be kind. And in fact, I was telling you this, and I was struck by in the very beginning of this particular book, he said the reason they put this book together was that he was teaching with his wife and I think Marie. They were teaching a class years and years ago. In fact, when the center, when the foundation was in Roscoe, New York, and they were really struck by the course's content, what they were talking about in the workshop about being kind, being loving, and learning forgiveness. But then when there were breaks or the lunch, they noticed how much conflict there was with the students. And they said, you know, it was just such an interesting juxtaposition of sitting all day listening to this wonderful stuff, but then going right back to your life and finding all kinds of differences and really accenting or making those the important thing. And he said he was so struck by that that he decided the last day of the workshop to devote the whole thing to just the idea of being kind and how to actually take the course principles and practice them every single day. And then, of course, it was so wonderful that his wife, I think, is the one he said that really encouraged him. She goes, you've got to turn this into a little book. And so he did. And but that is what we're faced with. And I know you've reminded me of that many times that, you know, we get all into what we, you know, the metaphysics of the course, which is important, or, you know, quoting everything, but we forget how to just be nice.
Right, right. I mean, ultimately, the course is not an intellectual experience. We need, you know, we have to have the intellectual understanding and foundation, you know, that gives us what the metaphysical components of the course that are necessary to understand, even when we can't really accept them. It really, it's the experience of the course, the sort of, Ken used to talk about the, you know, reading this course with your heart, the, you know, bringing it, approaching it like you would a great work of art or a beautiful piece of literature, and just opening to it, which, you know, kind of is that putting aside the idea that I know what kindness means, that I know what anything really means, because that I know what forgiveness means, you know, that I know, really where I need to go and what's wrong. I mean, all of what we think about ourselves is being questioned by the Course. And so we really need to just kind of approach it from, you know, more in the realm of an emotional spiritual state than we do from an intellectual state. And, you know, kindness is the idea of really treating others, you know, without judgment, with complete compassion and acceptance. And that's not normal to us as human beings, you know, that is abnormal in the state that we think we are as separated human beings, as individual identities. You know, this is an experience, and that we have to approach the Course more as a heart than a head. And so we're opening to something that we really in our current condition are incapable of understanding with a brain that was meant to block it, you know?
Right.
So the really, when we talk about kindness from the Course's perspective, it's not what the world means by that word, just as forgiveness is not what the world means by forgiveness. You know, we could think of kindness from the Course's perspective is really treating everyone regardless of how, of what they're, you know, where they're at and how they're presenting and, you know, whatever kind of emotional turmoil they're in, with compassion, you know, with seeing that we're the same, with seeing that we share, you know, they have the same fear within them that they can never find their way home, that they have, you know, that they really separated from God and ourselves and, you know, can never go back to that one loving mind. And so that thought within all of us is absolutely terrifying. And so everyone deserves to be treated with compassion, you know, as a little child would be treated, who's extremely frightened and acting out from a completely confusing and you know, dream. And so, you know, kindness, it isn't the idea of the world's kindness, which is often like forgiveness, you know, you could call it kindness to destroy, which is the,
yes,
the idea that, you know, you're kind to manipulate other people so that you can get what you want, you know, and have them treat you like you want to be treated or be approved of or get, you know, get something from them, whether it's love or, you know, we do it with bosses, we do it with teachers, we do it with our parents. We learn from the time we're born to try to manipulate the world around us to get, you know, to try to meet this inner need, this inner lack that we feel. And of course it doesn't really ever work. And then we're even more unkind to each other, you know. We're passively unkind with kindness to destroy, and we're aggressively unkind when you know, people can't meet our needs, which of course they really can't ultimately, and then we're very, very critical and condemning and judging.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was just going to say, and in fact, even in this little book, I've read it multiple times, but even, you know, as I've been rereading it recently, I even go, it's almost like for the first time. I mean, like I said, how could I forget this? And like some of the things Ken says is, he goes, you know, don't ask Jesus or God or your inner teacher what to say to somebody else. You know, all you need to do is join with them, you know, and it's like, just say, as I said before, I don't know how to be kind. I don't know how to do this. Admit that. I don't know how to do this. And as you join with your inner teacher, then you can be assured that you're just going to be guided in that way. So once again, you know, and another thing he says is, our assumption is that we can rightly judge both ourselves and others. And that's what fuels our unkindness. So whenever we get back into, I know what the kind thing is to do, or I know what the right thing is to do, the minute we do that, we probably don't.
Right, very true. Yeah. And you know, again, we're always using kindness in you know, the world's kindness, what we grew up with as thinking of kindness, to try to make the difference, to emphasize the differences between us. You know, whether it's, if we're trying to get something from someone else, we believe that they have something that we don't have. You know, it's always this comparison and weighing of how we can somehow manipulate and milk the world around us to needs, you know, and really we don't know what our real need is. We're completely out of touch with the mind, and you know, the memory of that loving part of our mind, that whole part of our mind that never took the separation seriously. That's, you know, the need to reconnect with that everybody is literally dying for walking around here. That's our only real need. And so, but in practice, as you're saying, the way that we work with it on a practical level is by really, you know, making it about them, as Ken used to say. You know, that's that joining with them. I mean, it's not joining with them as bodies, but it's joining with what's shared between us. And what's shared between us is that same wound, if you will, of believing, you know, in separation, that self-inflicted wound, and the same need to heal the mind that could think such a thing was possible. And so everybody, you know, where we need to put our attention is on when is watching ourselves, as you know, throughout our day, become unkind, you know, watching our judgments, watching the way we try to emphasize differences in the people around us, watching the way we're always trying to side with victims over victimizers, with one group over another, always in a way which, you know, causes further separation, which makes separation real, which it proves the, and acts out the ego's agenda, that I really do exist apart from God, but it's not my fault. It's blanks. It's theirs, you know, and it's the individual that I, you know, in my family, or it's the person that I work with, or it's the, you know, person that I'm on the phone with right now, or it's the person that I see on the news, or, you know, what I'm listening to. And so, you know, we're on the lookout constantly to find those perpetrators. And you know, we were talking about before we started recording how easy it is for us to completely dissociate this course, you know.
Right.
As you were saying, I mean, in Roscoe, like, the you know, people in classes, just not, you know, we can be listening to this one, we can be reading these beautiful passages in the course, and we can be discussing how we're all the same, and that, you know, love makes no comparisons, and that differences are, you know, that differences are just inventions of the ego. We just dreamt these, we're dreaming this, we dreamt these differences up, and we're giving them all the meaning that they have for us, and we're making them important, you know, to try to relieve this sense of guilt that we feel over separation and put it on somebody else. But then we read all of that, and you know, we go right back and do right in the same class. Someone can get started talking about while they were watching. This happened the other night in my class, but it happens all the time. And we all do it. Is, you know, we start talking about how of something that we're watching on the news, or something that happened in our lives, and you know, telling the story of it, and it's evident that we're completely excluding whoever we're talking about from the practice of forgiveness, from this idea of being kind. You know, we've put a wall between us and them, and we've said, I'm not like that. You know, they're the problem. They're the reason that I can't be peaceful. And you know, that's a lie. And our job as course students, it's not a sin, but if this is our path, and we believe that this is leading us home and in a direction, you know, this is going to heal our split mind, and we're committed to that path, then to the very best of our ability, we need to be paying attention to our own reactivity. I mean, that's what this whole practice is about. And I mean, kindness is really just, you know, it's a synonym in a sense for forgiveness. Maybe a little bit easier to remember at times, because it's also something that we can, you know, just sort of effortlessly practice. But it's the process is the same. It's really seeing how unkind we're being in a given moment, and you know, questioning whether that's, you know, why we're doing that, and do I really want to keep doing this? This is because it's hurtful, and ultimately it's hurtful to me. This is you know, preventing me. I've given this the power to cost me right now the peace of God. And, you know, I could see peace instead of this. And if I'm not, it's because I don't want to. And we really have to own that idea. I think I told you in my class, we got really talking about this and noticing this in ourselves. And so I gave the people in my class a homework assignment that I'm practicing too. In fact, I'm going to try to use it tomorrow night during the debates. I said, your mission, if you choose to accept it, when I wrote the email to them. But is, and would you mind if I read it?
No, in fact, I wanted you to.
Okay. So you know, maybe everybody listening might want to try this, because we rarely give practical exercises like this on the show when we talk CA, but you know, this, with everything going on, I mean, the world certainly seems to be just one damn calamity after another. And I mean, more and more horrifying, right? And mm-hmm. and everybody seems reactive. I mean, no matter what side of whatever you're on, everybody's reactive. I mean, it's very obvious that everybody is walking around feeling like they're a frightened child and needing to defend themselves right now. So I think as we're, you know, a great exercise and practice of this can be done while you're watching, and the assignment was while you're watching TV or radio news or reading news updates on your computer and catching yourself reacting, condemning, mentally criticizing, becoming fearful, angry, or taking sides. Observe how you automatically align yourself with whoever you consider the victim or victims rather than the victimizers. So we immediately pick a side. And it happens so spontaneously that we're not even, it's unconscious almost, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and we divide the world into the two categories.
Right.
We automatically divide, you know, we love to divide things into victimizers and victims.
Right. And I mean, that's the ego's agenda, you know, it's me against the world. It's us or them, you know, it's one or the other. That's the ego's thought system. And so by watching, you know, paying attention to how am I feeling right now as I'm sitting here, you know, on the couch, watching the news, watching the debates, watching whatever, listening to the radio, you know, driving my car and listening to the radio news, or, you know, watching my computer, the news headlines on my computer, and then clicking on a story that, you know, is going to, that I click on because I know it's going to really trigger me, right? And I want to go there. And again, it's not that we should watch the news. That's a normal thing to do, right?
Right.
So to say that you know, it's since you'll hear course students say, well, I don't, you know, as if they're above, like, watching the news anymore or voting or participating. When Ken was talking about being normal, that's what he was saying, is this is not a path in, you know, trying to, like, act, you know, further cause separation by acting as though we're somehow above in level one, you know, to advance, to participate in the world. This is a course in which the world is our classroom.
Right.
And we actually want to be in the world, you know, I mean, it's where the course meets us. It's where it came to Helen and Bill. It is what it's teaching us is based on the world around us and practicing it within the world. So while we're doing that, to just, The first step is really to just observe how we align ourselves with whoever we consider the victims, you know, which victim. And of course, everybody's, you know, will have a different side. I mean,
yeah.
We know in this country, you know, when we're talking politics, that, you know, roughly 40 to 50% of us will be on one side or the other, 40 to 60% somewhere in there will fluctuate back and forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of which side they're on. So, and then, so after we've just noticed that, noticed how you may try to use what they did to justify your reaction. And it's, you know, really it's not, I'm saying may just to be nice, but how we already have used it to justify our reactions usually, and how you mentally may try to distance yourself from their behavior, meaning how, you know, I'm not like that, right?
Right.
I'm not in that group. I'm in this other group, this more advanced group, this more kinder group, right?
Right. Or it's more sane.
Saner, kinder, you know, more evolved, all those kinds of things that go through our heads. So, how you mentally distance yourself from their behavior, thoughts such as, and I just gave some examples, how could someone do or say that? What's wrong with this person, these people? Who the hell would vote for him or her? You know, that sort of thing. And we could go on and on with examples. So then notice how you are identifying with the quote unquote innocent person or group and seeing the other person or group as the guilty ones, you know, and we're always saying that someone has to be guilty. So, and then finally, don't try to change what you're feeling. Simply notice what you're doing and remind yourself it's not for the reason you think, because love sees no differences and makes no comparisons. Anything that we are experiencing, any feeling that we're having or thought that we're having, which Jesus or Holy Spirit would not have, has to be wrong, because it's based on something that is not true and is not there. So that's all we have to, you know, that's really all we have to know. That leads us to realize that, you know, their awareness is always that everyone here, everyone, including me, including them, including the worst perpetrator I identify out there, everyone here is fighting the same hard battle of trying and ultimately failing to displace on others the horrifying guilt they secretly feel within. That's what we all have that in common. And we all have that memory of wholeness in our mind and that decision-making part of our mind that can choose again. And that's all that's real within us, you know, but that's shared. And so in any given moment, I have the power to change my mind about them, that's what will return peace to my mind. That's the only thing that will return peace to my mind, because nothing out there took it away. So.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, and I go back to this a lot, but this is what's so difficult to do. We get so caught up in the form. And what I say to myself is, well, getting excited or all bent out of shape about this is nothing more than getting bent out of shape because somebody likes vanilla ice cream and I prefer chocolate.
Right.
And yet, as you were talking about, we do believe there's a hierarchy of problems. There is a hierarchy of challenges. So we can't see it as simply as, oh, they just have a different preference. And so there again, their preference does this and this and this and this. So I'm justified in excluding them. I'm justified in judging them because this is all very, very important.
Right, right. And but we have to remember that that's the way we set it up. You know,
yeah.
I always used to quote that sentence from the Course about we need to see the problem as it is instead of, and not how you have set it up, and Jesus telling us that. So the way we set it up is to disguise the whole thing, you know, is a huge cover up. And one of the most effective, you know, the whole idea of time is part of the ego's invention to play this out so that we're always constantly focusing on the past and the future and never present, where the decision to choose again is in the present, right? Mm-hmm. That's where peace abides. That's the only, eternity is present. There is no time in eternity. And one of the other big ways that we deceive ourselves and deliberately deceive ourselves and forgot we set it up this way is to make everything seem as though there's this hierarchy of illusions, and that, you know, their guilt is real, and some people and some, you know, circumstances and institutions are guiltier than others. And that's, you know, that's what the body's sensory apparatus is constantly trying to give us feedback of, you know, look how horrible this is. And so we're constantly judging within this whole scale, this imaginary scale of guilt. But the truth is that there is, you know, the guilt, all guilt that we see in the world is a reflection of only a belief in that guilt in the mind, and the guilt there never happened. There was never a crime. So this is really all just a giant hallucination. And we can't really be in touch with that. But in this very moment, when we return right now and watch our reactivity and say, you know what, this is, I'm wrong. I'm wrong about this. But the trick is to catch ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have to pay attention. It should become, we have to practice this to the point that it becomes absolutely automatic. That if I'm in an emotional state like that, and this is not to beat ourselves up and not to honor our emotional state, you know, not to try to take it away, because that's not helpful at all. That's often a way that we try to hide it, you know, but to just say, you know, if I'm reacting like crazy and angry and fearful and you know, just going nuts right now, and I think it's what I'm hearing on the news. You know, it's no different from if I think it's because of this person sitting across from me at the table, who's being completely unreasonable in my perspective. Then I must be wrong, because I'm seeing differently. I'm seeing differences between us that aren't really there. I'm seeing differently again than love would. Love makes no comparisons. Jesus does not see guilt in anyone. Jesus sees only that frightened child that call for love when we're having a meltdown. He sees it in me when I'm having the meltdown, and he sees it in the one I'm melting down about, you know, that I appear to be melting down about, and mm-hmm. seems to be acting out so politically incorrectly, so catastrophically at times. But that again is, you know, we're all harboring within the catastrophic thought that we separated from God, and it's terrifying. And we're driven outside the mind constantly. We're driving ourselves outside the mind constantly to try to, you know, as fugitives from love, so to speak, to try to defend ourselves from it. You know, I'm really not as bad as this one, God. You know, I want to show, I'm constantly trying to find somebody to pin as a scapegoat to pin this on. And so that I can feel temporary relief from my own guilt. And it doesn't work, you know? It just makes us crazier.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking of a couple of things. One is that, I don't know if it was in this little book or something else I was reading recently, Ken was talking about the fact that we're all insane.
Yeah.
And so to argue about whether or not you're more insane than me is just silly. Because it's all insanity.
But we all do argue about that, don't we?
Yeah, we do. But he said, but that's what it's like. It's like, I'm insane, you're insane, but I'm going to argue about whether your insanity is worse than my insanity instead of looking at, I'm insane.
Well, no, really. I mean, that's right. It's like, and we get into things like, well, I wouldn't have been insane if you hadn't started it, right? And you were insane first, and you're more insane. And you know, it's just, yeah, it goes on and on. And so the name calling that it's a great exercise to see right now, all the name calling that's going on. And really, but the trick is to see that this is the healing, this is my mind. You know, that's what we have to own. To not say, wow, look at what they're doing, but to say, wow, look at what I am participating in,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I'm complicit in this. If I'm believing that the reason that I'm upset has anything to do with that, because nothing outside us has the power to take our peace away.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken, I mean, Ken probably says that on every CD set that I've ever listened to of this over and over again. And that's what Jesus is saying, you know. No, mm-hmm. It doesn't have, you know, the cause is not where you think it is. Ideas leave not their source. The cause is in the mind. And however much you project it on the screen, it's still in the mind that's projecting, you know. Doesn't leave it. It's just a shadow. And so, I mean, that's where the metaphysics, you do have to understand the metaphysics, but the practice of it is when I'm being unkind, you know, whenever I'm being unkind, that's my clue. And it always means too, that I first accused myself, the Course says. So I've always believed first, you know, I'm not conscious of this, but that I am the home of evil, darkness, and sin. And I know that if I'm seeing it outside there, because I wouldn't have needed to project it outside to defend myself if I first hadn't believed it about myself. Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, that is where I think we can try to really, that child image is so helpful to me from lesson 182, because it's just, it's like, oh, you know, I have to see that the child within me became terrified again and totally convinced that she was unworthy of redemption. And so, you know, if I'm seeing that outside in an imaginary other, that's a reflection of that one child. And they must be also experiencing that, because there's just that one child, you know?
Yeah.
So we're all hurting. And to me, that helps me. That sort of returns me to compassion. Just that thought that this is a really a baby we're talking about here, that really thinks that it's abandoned. You know, we've turned it around. It thinks it's abandoned and it's screaming.
Yes.
And there's a lot of screaming going on.
There sure is. Well, you know, even like recently what's happened in North Carolina with all the riots.
Yeah.
And, you know, once again, I was reminded, it's one of those sociological things that it's just so surprising, because when people get that upset and it becomes a mob mentality, then they start destroying businesses.
They just start destroying themselves.
So. You know, and but I'm like, okay, now how is destroying your neighborhood and destroying a business going to really affect violence, you know, and the police brutality? Is that really going to do anything? But see, we know it doesn't, because by then it truly is insanity. It is just a mob. You know, I'm angry and I'm screaming and I'm going to destroy something in front of me. It doesn't matter what that thing is.
No, it doesn't.
And there again, I mean, I'm sitting here trying not to judge that. In fact, I think I've been in some, you know, in my lifetime, I've been in some mobs. Not necessarily intentionally, but I, you know, lived, or, you know, I went to CU during the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. and the very tail end of it. And that, what an eye opener, because, you know, there was always some kind of protest and tear gas on campus and all kinds of things. And I mean, as an 18-year-old, I was like, oh my God, you know, this is just amazing. And, you know, just all kinds of things, and recognizing, I mean, that really is insanity. And when we allow ourselves to get to that point, we really are insane, you know, but we're insane before that, long before that. But, you know, I see that as, after you all calm down, you go, yeah, why did we destroy this business or turn over these cars or light these fires? And it's the same kind of thing when I'm sitting just even by myself and I realize I've gotten so upset, I've taken the side of some victim and said, boy, why did you allow yourself to go so crazy?
Well, and I mean, mob mentalities very often erupt as a result, you know, because victimizers don't victimize unless they believe that, you know, unless they first believe they were victims. So, so, you know, again, it's always, we feel justified in our anger, and that anger, you know, that anger is really can escalate so quickly, because it really is sort of boundless. You know, we want so much to prove that we're right and to somehow exonerate ourselves from that guilt again, and to believe that we're justified in, you know, finally finding the guilty one. And, you know, that's already happening in our mind. That's that frightened child that doesn't know how to control itself, you know, and is throwing a tantrum. And so, but it's so important to see that I have that within myself. As a Course student, we've got to say that you know, to get in touch with that within us, in a sense, you know, that and with tenderness toward it, because it's a baby. It's a baby that's screaming, you know, it's not how it appears. And so really, you know, Jesus sees only that us with only that tenderness and only that compassion, and, you know, would like nothing more than to take us in his arms, you know, but we have to turn back toward him. And we have to see that we can't be excluding all these other victims or, you know, victimizers from our awareness and believing that we're different from them. We can't just crawl into Jesus's lap by ourselves, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very good point. And, you know, just that whole idea of the victimizer versus the victim, how quickly does it change?
Right.
How quickly do we take turns?
Right. Of course. And that's, you know, that again, it's a disguise. It's a trick, a sleight of hand. You know, Jesus says that about time, but all illusions are exactly that. They're smoke and mirrors. We made it so that it would appear very realistic, and it does. But movies are just movies, you know, and they're not, and they have someone who conceived them and someone who produced them and directed them. And it's all the person that is experiencing it at any given moment, you know? So this is my dream. And if this is my dream, I am responsible 100% for the quality of my experience in it. And that experience does not have to be, you know, a mob scene. I don't have to be condemning. I don't have to be, you know, aligned with the idea of punishment. I can be aligned with the idea of consolation. I can be aligned with the idea of, you know, sameness and the idea that no matter what anyone seems to have done out there on the screen, it in no way has changed in any way God's love for them. And so why is it changing mine? You know, I want to learn that I'm part of that love. It can't really change mine. And that's what we're literally dying to hear.
Mm-hmm.
On some level. And we hear that by still being loving to the one, you know, learning that the ones we love to hate are blocking our own experience of love and saying, I don't want this anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and so going back to your exercise, I want to make sure that we kind of highlight what the salient points are there in terms of that exercise. And so, you know, the first is, you know, and there again, being normal, you know, I think you emphasize the idea that that's it. We're all watching TV or we're listening to the news or we're participating in parties or gatherings or going to school or whatever it is that we're doing. You know, no doubt we're going to run into some things that are going to start getting emotional reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we do, your first suggestion is just, you know, watch yourself and see when you have an emotional reaction, when you have a strong reaction, how we are aligning ourselves with the victims or the victimizers,
right,
and how easy it is to put people in those two categories.
Mm-hmm.
And then notice what the reaction is. Just notice what we're feeling, notice what we're thinking, and also just dividing people into innocent and guilty. How easy that is, how much we love to do that. But I think the other thing that I want to really emphasize for people is this also isn't about changing what you're feeling.
No,
it's not about denying it. It's not about judging yourself. It's about just paying attention to it.
Right. It's just noticing it. And I mean, really, again, noticing it with that tenderness towards yourself. Oh, I must be very, very frightened right now. You know, that it's that child in me that is, you know, just jumped in and thought that it had to somehow try to prove its innocence. I wouldn't be trying to side with what I, you know, to figure out who's right here, if that were not the case. So to really see, oh my gosh, I'm the one who's terribly, feeling terribly guilty right now. It's me. It's not about them at all.
Yeah. And, you know, I was reminded of something else. You know me, I'm always kind of going on a tangent, Susan, but it's my thing. But I heard Tony Robbins just very, very quickly. I think that's his name, the motivational speaker. I heard it, something he said the other day that was equivalent to, he goes, you know, everybody thinks the really rare thing on this planet is the multimillionaire, the billionaire. And he said, but the really rare thing on this planet is somebody who just knows how to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And what it made me think of is, you know what? We may not all have the ability to figure out how to make $1 billion, but we all do have the ability to find peace of mind.
Yes.
We do have the ability to be happy dreamers, to, you know, moment by moment, learn forgiveness, learn to be kind, learn to have peace of mind. And so when he said that, I thought, whoa, he's right. That's the very rare person who knows how to do that. And yet that's the thing that costs us nothing other than our time and our attention.
Right, right. And again, I mean, the course is, though, is, you know, a little different in that it's an undoing.
Right.
And so it's not really, you know, it's not really the pursuit of happiness from the course's perspective as much as it's the recognition that my, all of the lines I'm drawing in the sand, all of the rush to judgment that I'm experiencing, all of my reactivity and pointing a finger, it's not my feelings in themselves that have any, you know, real power. It's the blaming others for triggering the feelings that is causing me pain. And that's the recognition that we're asked to come to in the course. It's not a direct approach to happiness. It's
right.
Moving the blocks to our awareness that we have everything we need. We mm-hmm. don't have any needs. We really don't. We don't have, you know, enough. We have peace within us all the time, right here, right now. If it's not there, you know, it's my own. I've run away from God again. You know, I've been that frightened child again. And so if we could kind of gently invite ourselves back and say, oh, I must have become very afraid if I'm this angry right now. And it has nothing to do with that. It's about that, you know? And mm-hmm. I'm afraid everybody's afraid because we're all part of each other. And so everybody's acting out and so angry around me because they're afraid too, just like me. And for the same reason.
Yeah.
and just as unconscious about it. So I'm trying right now, as a course student, I'm trying to become conscious because the ego survives in concealment. I'm trying to bring to light that choice I'm making, and so that I can look at it with Jesus gently and say, oh, you know, I'm wrong about the solution to this. And, you know, it's okay. Or even I don't know what the solution is, even better, you know, I don't know what the solution is, but I know there has to be a better way. This is so hurtful what I'm doing. And I mean, the whole thing about protection is it might feel temporarily okay. And a relief to you know, again, that attraction that we have to side with the victim so that, you know, that we can feel that we're part of that innocence and it's the other ones that are the problem. But that's a very, very temporary relief. And the more we practice this, it's not a relief at all, we see. We see that all it is doing is keeping this unconscious, which just keeps the guilt circulating and alive and, you know, and real in our minds. And so it's just, we're on this treadmill of constant, you know, attack and defense and it's exhausting and it's, you know, really ultimately, it's ultimately, you know, destructive to anything that is authentic within us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love that line that you just said, the ego survives in concealment.
Right. And Kim used to say that. I can't take credit for that. He said, you know, something to that effect that yes, the ego is always alive, you know, because we're denying we're denying that we chose it. We're denying why we chose it. We're denying the whole thing. It's all a big cover up, but it's something we deliberately forgot. It's not, it's still accessible to us. You know, it's still there. It's not all we are. We have a part of our mind that knows it's just complete silliness. You know, it's just complete, again, it's smoke and mirrors. It's just, I mean, it's a joke to think that, what does the Course say? It's a joke to think that, that time could come to circumvent eternity or something like that.
But, yes.
You know, and it, I mean, seen truly, it is a joke. And, you know, so what am I seeing? How am I seeing this other person or this other group or this situation? In what way am I seeing it differently from Jesus' Holy Spirit? Because that's the only correct vision within my mind. So if I'm seeing it differently, if I'm having, you know, these angry thoughts or these defensive thoughts or these frightened thoughts, then I must have first chosen to make guilt real again right now. And I have a choice right now to step back and say, no, that's not what I really want. We may not feel an instant, you know, again, the purpose of this exercise is not to make us feel better. The purpose of the exercise is to help us see what we're doing so that it becomes more and more conscious. And so that eventually we just say, you know, this is ridiculous. Why am I doing this? I don't have to keep doing this anymore, you know?
Yeah. Well, and on that note, I think we're going to have to call this a wrap today, Susan. But thank you so much for bringing that exercise. And thank you for just, you know, discussing this. I mean, this is something we could discuss, you know, every couple of weeks, kindness and being normal. They're such important concepts.
Yeah, we didn't really cover the whole thing of what Ken means by being normal either. But yes, maybe.
Well, maybe we could do that on another show, but, you know. But partially we did, because just like when you in your exercise said, this isn't about, you know, you don't have to judge your feelings. Just it's normal to be upset.
Absolutely.
It's normal to have those feelings. Yes. Allow yourself to be normal, but still look at what that means.
Right. And try not to, and don't, you know, don't try to think that you're a bad course student and try to be further along than we are, most of us. You know, we don't know that we are as God created us. If we knew that, we wouldn't be here and we wouldn't need a teacher. And
that's right.
You know, we're in school. And Ken always said, we're children. Jesus refers to us as children, infants, you know, often babies. So it's okay.
And in fact, Ken, in his book, says he's answering some questions from the audience, and somebody asks him, if I've worked through a lot of judgment with another person and am peaceful, when I go back to my ego, will all the murderous thoughts return? And Ken's response is, the ego is 100% thought system. It does not decrease. It is hatred and murder through and through. And therefore, if you are back in your ego system, you are back into hatred and murder. What changes as you progress in the course, and there is no objective way of measuring this, is the amount of time you spend in your ego as opposed to the amount of time you spend with the Holy Spirit. When you are in your ego, it's the full-blown ego. Similarly, when you are with Jesus, there is only love because there is nothing else. All that changes is the amount of time you choose to spend in being insane. And on that note of insanity, it's about time to wrap up the show for today. So I want to thank Susan Dugan so much for joining me today and for being here and for just participating in this discussion. You can always find Susan at www.forays.com. And that's forays as in forays. Forgiveness. So www.forraysinforgiveness.com. So thanks, Susan, and thanks to all the listeners and everybody in the chat room, and thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. Remember, you can always find me on 12listen.com for private consultations. You can also find me for my other radio show, Simple Tales, on Tuesdays. And today, you can find Kathleen Peterson and Friends coming up next. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, with my guest, Susan Dugan, here on 12 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about kindness.